rewarding innovation excellence, she says, you know, rival the Pulitzer Prize and the Nobel Prize. Make it awarding some outstanding creativity. And which is sort of the Nobel Prize. They do that. They award scientists and doctors and things. So she's trying to create an award for not obvious hardware science. Some
the
other kind of thing.
Employer of the year of I&M.
Yeah, no, it would be, well, definitely, if she grew more and more appreciative of I&M, then we'd get an award. If she does the RNA drops and it has all those great effects on her, we are the most creative people on the planet right now, so she would have to give us an award, right?
Right.
Yes.
On that level she's trying to, but I think we would get the award every year. She doesn't know it yet.
Bob, are you going to help her order? Because I kind of sense she might not know, be really into how to order the products. Think she can?
Yeah, she... no, I'm going to help her. Yep.
Good.
I have to call her and see how she reacts to this thing.
Yeah,
I have to find out what her drunk fucking ass is going to be talking about tomorrow. Will she even remember this? Will she say, Bob, that what a ridiculous thing. I'm glad I didn't take it seriously. Ian was all bullshit. But no, I think this, she was genuinely impressed at certain points, so she's not going to be able to be as flippant about it this time.
Yes,
she might say, well, how, if we were on the radio, how did it become private? That should be a valid question. That would be a valid question. If you were saying
maybe that's when Ion separated her, you all got disconnected and she stayed on. That's maybe.
Oh, I can use that one, Bert. That's a good one. Remember when we got disconnected? Well, that's when we got shipped. Yeah, that is a good point, Bert. That's the alibi. Hey, we can tell Carol and she can relax. You hear that, Carol? No, she's watching TV. No, like, how come, you know, when I bring someone else on the line, if I get disconnected, they're connected through me. They got to get disconnected.
Yeah.
Right?
She did. It didn't happen to her.
When we got back on, there she is. That's where it shifted. Hopefully she won't go and listen to when it happened, you know, and then figure, oh, well, some bad stuff was said before that. But I was saying when we did get disconnected, I realized what happened. I said to Karen, yeah, it was starting to get pretty heavy, you know. A disconnection had to happen, and I thought I would have to call Mary back. So I get back online, and then I go to start dialing Mary, and I hear Mary talking to Ion. And I thought, oh, I brought her back in, or she called it, and that didn't make any sense. But I was thinking she was gone. So maybe Ion did. Maybe when you guys list the archives, you'll find that it's dead air for a whole stretch. I doubt it, but don't delete it, Bill. Don't delete it. We're still negotiating. We can come up with an alibi.
Yeah, that's the loop.
Happy for Bob.
That's the loop.
What'd you say, Eliza?
I said, save a good copy for Bob, and then you can do it on the radio show.
Yeah, when you know, push comes to shove and nobody cares anymore, I can play it or give it to people. But where is Bill? We got to get Bill in here to find out what he's up to. Are you still alive, Bill? The station's on the air, so you're okay, Bill. Why don't you come in for a second, Bill? Tell us what you think of this dilemma. Hey, do you guys like that 10,000 Maniac song, Hey Jack Kerouac? You guys ever heard it before? I played it like 3 times.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of her. She's kind of depressing.
Yeah, what is it? I don't know anything about her other than they said she innovated. When I found this YouTube, I thought it was pretty interesting. And what she was saying, I wasn't sure what her purpose was. Then I saw an interview with her, and she said that the younger generation gets suckered by role models. And the common role model is someone who lives fast and dies young. She says, what if Marilyn Monroe lived a long life and we had to watch her have saggy breasts and become, she said, like Betty Davis? She thought that was cool. The illusion that these people, I don't know, do well, die young, and, no, what is it?
Die young and leave a good-looking corpse.
Yeah, but there was, I think she objected to that people, it was a negative thing, that people who are role models are negative because they die. They die young. So if you listen to the lyrics or read the lyrics with that in mind, it's a pretty interesting statement. So someone said that
some don't really die, some just fake their deaths. Like,
yes, that's true.
Elvis and
right.
Michael Jackson and others.
But this song was written 25 years ago. So before she could know this fake death stuff. But somebody said that she had a certain swingy dance style. Was the band supporting her? Was it all about her? Was she a big icon for a while?
Yeah, it was her. 10,000 Maniacs right. was the band, yeah. It's so weird. I'm totally spacing on her name.
Natalie Merchant.
Natalie Merchant, that's right. I kept thinking Natalie Wood. Like, it's not Natalie Wood.
Right. Okay.
Natalie Wood from Facts of Life.
But the song is about your city, San Francisco. It's really good lyrics. I don't think you'd get what she was saying in the interview from just reading the lyrics. But once you know her explanation, then the lyrics make sense. So maybe I should read them. Oh, by the way, a major statement from Alan Cabal in this week's story. It's pretty presumptuous what he says.
Can we do him
ready
soon?
Yet.
Oh.
Beg your pardon?
Can we do him soon? I always
we'll
like the Alan Cabal.
Right. So we'll do him now and then do the McLuhan. So, but the lyrics are, okay, so what is it? Hey, Jack Kerouac. So it says, I like the way it begins. Hey, Jack Kerouac, I think of your mother. Now, he's very close to his mother, is the myth, right? Went back and lived with his mother, I think. So very involved with his mother. Hey, Jack Kerouac, I think of your mother and the tears she cried. They would cry for none other than her little boy lost in a little world that hated and that dared to drag him down. Her little boy courageous. Remember, he was, look on a YouTube of him and William Buckley and Ed Sanders and some guy, Yablonsky, a year before he died in 69. So in 68, he's on Fire and Line, and they're saying he's drunk, but he's very bitter and pissed off at everybody. And Ginsberg's in the audience, and he even puts down Ginsberg. So then it says, he, Jack, chose his words from mouths of babes got lost in the world. Hip flask-slinging madmen, steaming cafe flirts, they all spoke through you. Hey, Jack, now for the tricky part. When you were the brightest star, who were the shadows of the San Francisco Beat Boys? So, you know, he couldn't handle the fame. And he didn't, he hated the term Beat Generation. He did not consider that that's what he wrote about. It says, you were the favorite. Now they sit and rattle their bones and think of their blood-stoned days. You chose your words from mouths of babes got lost in the world, the hip flasks, slinging madmen, steaming cafe flirts in Chinatown, howling at night. Then she goes on to Ginsberg. Alan, baby, why so jaded? Have the boys all grown up and their beauty faded? Billy, now she addresses William Burroughs. Billy, what a saint they made you. You're just like Mary down in Mexico on All Souls Day. And Mary is not his wife's name. I thought at first it was. Remember, you know, he shot his wife, supposedly accidentally, playing William Tell. You know that story?
No.
No.
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty terrible story there. He says that
she's
during
comparing
the day, rocket. What?
Sorry, is she just comparing his sainthood to that of Mary? Mother of Jesus,
no.
Mary?
Well, yeah, in a way.
Oh.
Yes, that's right. At first I thought is the woman he shot was named Mary, but no, her name is Joan. Yes, they've made a saint out of him, and he was a jerk in many ways. McLuhan told me to avoid him. But in retrospect, they make a big deal out of him. And, you know, you've read McLuhan's inventory, 11 points on Burroughs, and he shows how Burroughs is just a replay of an aspect of Finnegan's Wake. So, yeah, he's living with Joan Vollmer down in Mexico, and he says that during the day a demon overtook him, and he felt very bad, and he just didn't know why he was feeling bad. And then he goes home, and they start playing William Tell, you know, where you shoot the apple off the person's head. You know about that game?
Yeah.
So he went to shoot the whatever she had on her head and missed and hit her in the forehead, and she died.
Oh.
Mm.
Pretty awful thing. And then there's all these different stories about it. So you go on the Wikipedia and read the different versions of what he said happened. Different, yeah. It's, we don't need to go into it, but it's a pretty tragic story. So she's saying this negative situation. Hey, Billy, what a saint they made you. You're just like Mary down in Mexico on All Souls Day, which is Roxana's birthday. Right, Roxana? Day after, very same period, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the same week.
You're talking about Roxana. You're just
actually,
like, did they make a big...
My studio was very near the apartment where that happened in La Colonia Condesa.
And everybody knows about it. It's well known, that place?
Yes, I think there are even tours, like the William Burroughs wall.
Right. Right. Now, Mary, on All Souls Day, is that the, you got Halloween as the ghost day. Is Souls Day demons or nice souls? Is it the opposite of Halloween?
Well, one day is for the dead children and the second is for the grown-ups.
Mm. That's November 1st and 2nd.
The spirits. Yeah, but
right.
Actually November the thing starts like 1 week before and then on those days will be the altar of the dead that you have at home will be closed so that the spirits can come and smell the foods and be happy just to be remembered. And on the first day,
right, now,
children come, and on the second day, grown-ups.
Right, but Halloween is something different.
Yes. That's,
so it begins on the 30th or the November 1st, the two souls, the young and the old?
There's all.
Is that?
The actual celebration is on the 1st and the 2nd of November, but the whole preparation of the celebration takes like 2 weeks before.
Right.
And then you have this altar at home. It stays maybe.
And Halloween is part of it, but different.
Well, the thing is, because we are neighbors of the Americans, in Mexico everything is mixed. And we have no problem with that. Like people may have a witch or this Halloween thing on their altar, and it's no problem. Or
but it's not the main thing. The main days are the 1st and 2nd, not October 31st.
Right.
Yeah. So is Mary talked about on the first and second, or is she played down and not part of it? The Virgin Mary or Mary Magdalene?
Mary. Well, in the Indian communities, they don't have, usually they don't have saints on their altars, only like trees and crosses, but the crosses mean the connection between the other world, this world, and heaven, and the direction.
Right.
And in cities like in Mexico City, they put the saints, the favorite of the dead people or the favorite of the family. And you can have a Virgin Mary or other saints, or many saints. And in Mexico City, there's also, for example, the Santa Muerte, which is not acknowledged by the church, but now it's becoming more popular than even the Virgin. People really believe that the dead can help you.
So we have to ask her what she knew. Merchant, we don't know what. She could be just talking just generally. Mary is a Catholic saint in Mexico. But she's saying, what a saint they made you, Billy. So I'm not sure what she's getting at. Then he says, but it's a cynical statement about him. And then she says, you choose your words from mouths of babes lost in the world. Now, they would sit around listening to people talk in the cafes. They chose the words from the mouths of hipsters lost in the world. And write it down. Cool, junk-bootin' madmen, street-minded girls in Harlem howling at night. Then it says, what a tear-stained shock of the world. You've gone away without saying goodbye. So Kerouac dropped off pretty quickly. Anyways, that's the lyrics. Pretty good. So, do you want to hear the song now?
Yes.
No. No.
Yes. Is that Roxy complaining?
Madeline, I don't like her, and we already heard it at least twice.
What do you think? Should we respect Madeline's point?
No, I don't contribute enough to have a vote.
Yeah, did you say it's cynical, Madeline?
Yeah, like a lot of her stuff is.
She's is that right?
Kind of yeah.
And what happened to her?
I don't know. I think she's still around.
So she's older now. She's no big deal right now. Yeah, she was saying people are not allowed to get old, but you are going to get killed.
Yeah, so she said those words, so now she's nothing.
Right.
But she's old.
Well, I like her in this song. Okay, so we shall go over to McLuhan, but before we do that, we'll do Cabal. There was a Cabal last week. I think we should do all the Cabal.
You could do a Cabal sandwich with McLuhan in between.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, let's pick up the Cabal that we left off at.
Right. We there was, how many did we miss? Well, we missed several because we've gone a couple of weeks. And we didn't do the 13th. We didn't do the 20th and 27th. There's three. Did we do the Killing Game? That's
that
medicine.
Doesn't sound
I remember
familiar.
Doing that. No, The American healthcare system is a very sick joke. Or did we maybe? I remember doing.
Did we
it
do the delusion of wealth?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Let's
the
see.
Delusion of wealth.
Okay, the delusion of wealth. Yeah, Yeah, he talks about spending time with the America, the inevitable disaster in America's coming. We did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says there's a lot of, well, I don't remember saying this. There's a lot of pessimism around these days, but I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We did that?
We did do that one, yeah.
But look, I want to add this.
That's the
last
one, I
firmly believe. Right, so listen to this. I firmly believe that I'm going to witness a complete collapse of the oligarchy currently in power. The tide has been going out swiftly for the past 35 years. The inevitable tsunami is coming soon. Don't be on the beach when it hits. I think he thinks I'm presenting myself as an old oligarchy. It's a direct smear on me. I think we have a response.
That's what you said last time.
Yeah, that's what you said, Bob.
Oh, did I? Okay, good. All right, then that was done. All right, so we, the one next is the Killing Game. Did you guys hear, remember the terrible medical system? You don't remember hearing that?
No.
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 Okay, so let's do that. This is
that's the last.
You know,
the last one was about you, and this one's about Carolyn.
That's right. Okay, good one. Yeah, yeah. This is about, this is him attacking. Well, not really attacking Carolyn, but so he says it's called The Killing Game, subtitled "The American Healthcare System is a Very Sick Joke." He says, and let me mute everybody just so we get a good quality.
All participants are now muted.
He says, the Centers for Disease Control maintains that American hospitals are the third leading cause of death in this country, right after heart disease and just above, quote, smoking-related illnesses. Okay, let me expand this. I want to make the print bigger. So Carolyn is the one who pointed out the statistics that iatrogenic, which means doctor-caused disease, is the biggest killer in the world, or in America. So he is saying a similar idea, but he hasn't got it right. He hasn't got Carolyn's order. The Centers for Disease Control maintains that American hospitals are the third leading cause of death in this country. I think Carolyn's statistics say it's the main leading cause. Right after heart disease and just above smoking-related illnesses. At least they have the common decency to admit that cigarettes are safer than American hospitals, but I'm 100% certain that their figures on the subject are as dubious as the official unemployment numbers and the official inflation rate. Okay, there he seems to be supporting Carolyn. I'd wager that honest reportage of the deaths caused by prescription drugs, medical malpractice, bureaucratic incompetence, lousy hospital hygiene, and outright neglect based on ability to pay would put the American healthcare system firmly in the number one slot when it comes to morbidity and mortality here. So, okay, so he's agreeing with Carol. It's a damn sorry state of affairs when a tiny, low-budget country like Cuba has a better healthcare system than the self-proclaimed wealthiest country in the world. Our doctors are the highest-paid doctors in the world and the worst. For-profit medicine is as contemptible and plain stupid as the private prison industry and the privatization of water. Two recent incidents serve to lower my opinion of capitalist medicine even further. My 95-year-old aunt had a stent in one of her kidneys removed and replaced as it was causing a recurring infection. It was about 10 months old. She checked into a local hospital owned by a relatively new medical monstrosity, yet another in a long line of capitalist behemoths more concerned with dispensing extravagant compensation packages to well-coiffed, beautifully attired, do-nothing administrators and pleasing their shareholders than any activity that might be remotely construed as healing, healing in quotes. She was admitted on a Sunday and immediately hooked up to an antibiotic IV drip. The next day, a doctor came in and switched her over to a different antibiotic. They pumped her full of drugs for a few days and then took her into surgery on Thursday. After recovering, she was wheeling around in the hallway with my cousin at her side when a nurse expressed alarm at her roamings. Quote, you're supposed to be in isolation, unquote, she exclaimed. You're infectious, quote, unquote. You're infectious, At 95, having survived smallpox as a child, my aunt is sufficiently sick of bullshit from doctors and nurses that she just waved the pathetically misinformed creature away, but my cousin does not suffer fools gladly, and she went off. So the cousin said to the nurse, "Excuse me, but you just had her in surgery, and all up and down these halls. You're a little late," unquote. There was a fair amount of bureaucratic distress and alarm at the nurse's desk, finally resulting in an uneasy and not at all uniform acceptance of the fact that my aunt was not spreading Ebola all over their precious hospital. She was discharged on Friday, maybe the next day. From Sunday through Friday, so while she was there, from Sunday through Friday, her sheets were not changed, her room was not cleaned, and the bathroom was not sanitized. You get better housekeeping service at a goddamn Motel 6. Her kidney is fine, but she came home with a brand new sinus infection that's filling her ears with fluid and causing a fair amount of unnecessary discomfort. At least it isn't MRSA or tuberculosis. More seriously, and with drastically worse consequences, it turns out that my girlfriend Daisy's son Jonah, remember he died, sought help at a hospital in Rhode Island immediately upon his return there. I had misgivings about his return to the locale where his heroin habit had blossomed, and those turned out to be well-founded when he wound up being found dead of an overdose in his van on the grounds of a local university. He was found by a local cop who knew and liked him. This cop went the extra mile on what could have been a simple open-and-shut overdose case and uncovered a disturbing fact. Jonah had sought help at a local hospital, feeling that he was going to relapse into heroin usage. He was turned away. Apparently, standard operating procedure for treating addicts of any kind in American hospitals is that the addict must be under the influence in order to be admitted. Informally and off the record, it goes like this. Quote, "We can't admit you if you're sober. Come back wasted and we'll get you a bed," unquote. That might work with a drunk or a cokehead, but it's a dangerous game to play with a recovering junkie, especially given the quality of the heroin on the street these days, thanks to our misguided and futile adventure in Afghanistan. Jonah hadn't had any smack since December, and he was fresh off detoxing methadone. The fix he got to get him admitted to the hospital killed him. The doctors were quite open about what killed my ex-wife in 2003. The chemotherapy they used to treat her breast cancer in 1991 gave her the incredibly exotic cancer that killed her. The chemo they gave her for that second cancer made her life a living hell until she finally died. If I knew I had just... I think we'll unmute for this part. I'm going to unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
What are they, crazy?
This is horrible.
Just a minute. Listen. What? Are you reading ahead?
No, it's already horrible.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay, so listen to this. He ends by saying, "If I knew I had just a half hour to live, I'd like to spend it strangling a hospital administrator." Then he says, "The American healthcare system is a very sick joke, a killing joke." So what he's always talking about how he's a borderline psychotic, borderline serial killer. He went to New York as a kid, was a child actor, and got civilized. And he thanks, you know, his youth for that, because what is interesting about his column, he's threatening to turn into a terrorist. It's like this, we're weeding him each week. How much is he going to be able to take all this crap, right? And he's saying the medical stories are pretty bad. He admits he would kill somebody if he had the chance. The killing game, it's called. The American healthcare system is a very sick joke. Okay, so we did that one. What's next? Seek the flowers out is the next one.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. But he's negative. It's later than you think. Seek the flowers out. It's later than you think. Okay, this one. Now, let me mute. There's that sound, right? Well, that's because I unmute everybody. Okay.
All participants are now muted.
Amazing. Corbin's still here. You know, he's realized to come back later. He usually during the music then takes off and never comes back. But he's coming back now. So he says, it wasn't all hell. My tenure in Silicon Valley had some aspects that I've begun to miss. Remember when we did that at the beginning? The crazy scene, the racism and everything in Silicon Valley. The first thing certainly would be easy and affordable access to lab-tested quality cannabis products, particularly the spectacular Organicare's green caps containing 30 milligrams of THC. Those also had a healthy measure of CBD and CBN. I don't know what that is. They regulated my general health and mood across... Okay, so he's saying this is going to help. This helped him from being a serial killer. They regulated my general health and mood across a fairly wide spectrum of ailments very nicely. I got them at Buddy's Dispensary in San Jose, the best in the valley, and a 16-mile round trip for me at the time. They have the best informed staff and the best product at the best prices you'll find. And informed staff is important. It is medicine, and our species has used it that way for unknown millennia. I was so pleased at the situation that I didn't mind the local sales tax, which was hefty at just over 10%. Now I have to cop my weed through criminal enterprises, thanks to that bloated psychopathic gas bag, Chris Christie. He's the governor of New Jersey. Thanks to that bloated psychopathic gas bag, Chris Christie, who, in all defiance of the will of New Jersey voters, prefers to see the profits from the cannabis trade line the pockets of organized crime instead of the desperately bankrupt coffers of the state's pension fund. I miss my friend Caitlin in Oakland, who understands the sacrament of pain in every way. Loss shared is loss relieved of weight. It's like humping steel for some spectacle. Extra hands make it lighter. I guess he means when he worked in the circus or at Cirque du Soleil. It's like humping steel for some spectacle. Extra hands make it lighter. So that's what loss shared is loss relieved of weight. We dwell in our own palaces. We are inscrutable. I miss the people I work with the service of Bill Graham Presents. That's the old concert promoter. Since my previous crew experience had consisted solely of circuses, ballet, and theater, all intensely biased against rock roadies, I was delighted to lose my long-held stereotype of rock crew people being drug-addicted slackers. I now realize that my circus-induced perception of rock crew was based entirely on what you get when you offer circus wages. The Bill Graham Presents crews I worked with were consistently pleasant and interesting, and the crew I wound up on was the best I've ever worked with. Ambience, doing dressing rooms, and fulfilling the often challenging rider on the artist contract. I guess the best he ever worked with regarding ambience, doing dressing rooms, and fulfilling the often challenging rider on the artist contract. The people who actually removed those famous brown M&Ms from Van Halen and signed non-disclosure agreements to shelve Madonna's 23-volume hardcover edition of the Zohar or Britney Spears' private transportable custom toilet. When work becomes fun, you're there, in the flow. It's not what you make. It's not what you make. It's not even what you're doing. It's whom you're with. I miss being at ground zero in the event of a Russian nuclear first strike. I was right across the 101 freeway from Moffett Field, home to NASA Ames, and most of my work was at Shoreline Amphitheater right across the street from the Google campus. I wouldn't have been vaporized in an instant, most likely without a flicker of pain or comprehension. We are closer to an actual nuclear exchange now than we have ever been. The USA has modified its strategic position from mutual assured destruction, a position which has kept the peace since the birth of nuclear weapons, to a first-strike strategy. That is worse than a zero-sum game. It's a lose-lose proposition. If it all comes down, Cold War wisdom has it that the survivors will envy the dead. It's obvious enough that Vladimir Putin would rather have a bad peace than a good war. He seems to be the only adult in the room. If you want to know who the global bully really is, pin a map of the world to a wall and mark every country where the USA has military bases in blue and every country where Russia has military bases in red. The Warsaw Pact voluntarily dissolved itself in 1991. NATO failed to follow suit and, in fact, expanded. History teaches us that attacking Russia is suicidal, but the geniuses in charge clearly don't read history. They don't even watch Netflix. Terminator robots, anyone? DARPA is working on that. DARPA created the Internet. DARPA is working on that. If it goes all 99 red balloons, I want to be right at the center of it. I've known that since childhood. I miss the climate, drought or no drought. It's not about California. The climate of the San Francisco Bay Area is without a doubt, the finest climate in the lower 48. I've never been to Alaska or Hawaii, so I can't speak with authority about those places. But I do know that the ratio of men to women in Alaska is something like 10 to 1, and the life expectancy of a naked human being in the Alaskan tundra at the peak of summer is about 15 minutes. Are you muted, Carol? Well, she's not even on. Okay. Okay, where are we? And the life expectancy of a naked human being in the Alaskan tundra at the peak of summer is about 15 minutes. Owing to the fact that in those 15 minutes, over 250,000 mosquitoes will have drained enough blood to cause death. Hawaii is a fucking volcanic zit in the middle of a vast and angry sea. I will never go there, despite my intense affection for Lost. Just unmute. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
You know what I'm going to say, right? Another direct attack on me.
Yeah.
This is how he's responding to our stuff we're sending him. He will never go to Hawaii now, despite my intense affection for Lost. Okay, maybe we can keep it. No, I don't trust you guys. We're going to. Hey, Carolyn, you made awful noise. Did you guys hear the noise from Carolyn's sink?
No.
No.
Yeah, it's just louder to me, I guess. Okay.
All participants are now muted.
So, in the 8 years I spent in Mountain View, that's in California, in Silicon Valley, I wasn't once bitten by a mosquito. For a Jersey boy, that's a very big deal. The mosquitoes in New Jersey carry off Puerto Rican babies from Camden to their Geiger-esque hives in the pines. That's that Swiss artist, Geiger. The temperature on the San Francisco Peninsula rarely rises above 80 and almost never dips below 40. I can handle earthquakes. Well, I can handle earthquakes. I find them thrilling and intensely stimulating sexually. Volcanoes are quite another matter. Bob lives on one, and I have nothing to do with fucking Bob, the most outrageous, nosy punk cult leader in the world. Okay, in one of the worlds, that is said, but not in this world. He just says volcanoes are quite another matter. I hate pyrotechnics. Having narrowly survived one fire, I have no desire to experience another. Unlike most of my fellow Americans, I am capable of nuance. Nothing in this life is black and white. It's technicolor. Flowers still bloom in the unlikeliest of places, even in the midst of an avalanche of bullshit like Silicon Valley. As Robert Anton Wilson once said, quote, bullshit makes the flowers grow, unquote. Seek the flowers out and enjoy them. It's later than you think.
All participants are now unmuted.
Did we get some wisdom?
Kinda.
Yeah. Bullshit makes the flowers grow. Seek the flowers out and enjoy them. It's later than you think. So, he's always hating everything. I hate this, I hate that, hate, hate, hate. So, you guys got anything to say on that one? Is that just obvious?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, so we go on to the next one. Next one's called Extreme Responses. But I think that's this week. I have to check this. What's the order? All right, so the latest is Extreme Responses. So last week, it's called There's no such thing as unconditional love, except from animals. There's no such thing as unconditional love. So he doesn't. He wouldn't agree that love's a force field, would he?
No.
So he says, excerpt. There's no such thing as unconditional love except from animals. In Paradise Lost, John Milton writes, quote, the mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell a hell of heaven, unquote. And he says, having struggled with a relentless and profound self-loathing since the moment I became conscious of having a self to loathe, I can attest to the truth of that statement. I obtained my medical marijuana card in California on the basis of treating my HCV-induced anorexia. What's HCV? Is that herpes, Carol? What's HCV? Herpes? HCV. Oh, I forgot to mute these guys. What is that? How do you say it again? Human capilloma?
Yeah.
Okay.
All participants are now muted.
HCV-induced anorexia. So he says, I attained my medical...
Let me see the word. No, HCV. I don't know.
That's
that.
Herpes, isn't it?
No. Look it up. It might hepatitis?
HCV.
HCV. What'd you say? HPV. Yeah, hepatitis C.
Okay, so I think
so it would be hepatitis virus. Or hepatitis virus.
Yeah, so he says, I obtained my medical marijuana card in California on the basis of treating my HCV-induced anorexia, nausea, and the pain associated with multi-level degenerative disc disease, specifically LT through L5, where the horse tail fans out, the nerves controlling the lower part of the body. I'm a somewhat angry fellow, owing to my frustration with humanity's general inability and or unwillingness to snap out of their inhuman fixation on greed, avarice, and murder, not to mention a general inability to drive. So the remarkable anger management capacity of cannabis was a more than welcome side effect. Pot makes everything funny. What I hadn't noticed until now was the effect it had on my own self-loathing. I haven't had a joint in a month. I've learned to live with the pain. It's just background noise at this point. I force myself to eat. Luckily, I'm in New Jersey where I can obtain quality pizza, hoagies, and authentic Philly cheesesteaks. The smell of fried irons would make Karen Carpenter hungry. I've kept my social contacts to a bare minimum. I don't drive much. And I've been ignoring the news to the best of my ability, so anger isn't really an issue. The pot simmers, but it doesn't boil. But in the absence of a daily dose of THC, background has become foreground, and I find myself standing on the precipice of a yawning chasm of self-loathing that I've spent my life avoiding. I'm drinking a lot less, with no conscious effort on my part. Alcohol in the absence of pot is less than pleasant. In small doses, it's a mediocre but still effective analgesic. The humor element is gone, and I detest maudlin or angry drunkards. The humor element is gone, and I detest maudlin or angry drunkards. Alcohol is fundamentally a celebratory drug, a celebrating drug. Pouring booze on a bad mood is tantamount to pouring gasoline on a fire. In the mid-1960s, when I was a rising child actor on the New York stage, I was privileged to work with Edward Albee in a very successful mounting of three plays by Thornton Wilder at the Cherry Lane Theater. He was one of three co-producers, and I was enthralled by his menacing charisma. I was struck by the way the adults restrained themselves in his presence, the sudden caution of their composure in his presence. I read all his works and devoted myself to following his career. He was at the time one of those insanely dangerous drunks who can do more damage to a room full of people with his tongue than most people can do with a chainsaw or an AK-47. It was only much later that I understood the nature of my intense attraction to the man, Edward Albee. He was, like me, an adoptee. Like me, he was adopted by a couple who detested one another, who adopted a child in the vain and cruel hope that the child would somehow miraculously cement a failing marriage. It's a doomed proposition, and it dooms the child to a lifetime of self-hatred, forever unable to escape the clearly erroneous notion of being somehow responsible for the inescapable disintegration of the marriage. I don't know if his father was a psychopathically... What is this? I guess it's... So he was adopted. So he's talking about his adopted father's father. I don't know if his father was a psychopathically violent sexual degenerate like mine, or if his mother, having told him at an early age that he was adopted, repeated the words, quote, I wish you'd never been born, unquote, like some hideous mantra, and declared The Bad Seed her favorite movie. I hope not. No child should be subjected to that. But unfortunately, he was. My parents pulled me out of New York and the theater when I got a final D in algebra in the eighth grade. I went from a union actor on the rise in New York City to a marked hippie faggot mutant in Camden, New Jersey. I was fag-bashed constantly until late 1969 when the greasers and the jocks fell in love with Led Zeppelin and started copying LSD and pot for me. I went from shit on the wall to rock star status overnight. I've never used algebra in my adult life. I abandoned acting as a pursuit in 1988. I hated the audition process. More hating. I began actively courting rejection as a social strategy. It was my way of saying fuck you to humanity. It's marginally more civilized than being a serial murderer. It's marginally more civilized than being a serial murderer and involves less risk of jail time. Sitting here in my adoptive cousin's backyard with the squirrels, bunnies, and woodchucks, isolated in the suburbs of New Jersey, I've had plenty of time to reflect on my meltdown in Gainesville, Florida. It wasn't just my logical distrust of junkies and the tragedy that they bring that caused me to torch my relationship with Daisy when her son Jonah arrived. It was jealousy. I was and remain intensely jealous of her unconditional love for her child. I've never experienced unconditional love except from animals. I've never believed humans to be capable of such a thing. It undermines my harshly cynical worldview. Prior to this, whenever someone brought up the idea of the unconditional love between a mother and her child, I'd bring up Melissa Drexler, a Jersey girl back in the 90s who dropped a baby out of her coos in the girls' room at the prom, tossed it into a wastebasket, and went back out and danced with her boyfriend to the strains of Metallica's, quote, Nothing Else Matters, unquote. Then he says, I envied that kid, you know, the kid that got murdered. I envied that kid. I still do. Well,
All participants are now unmuted.
After that one.
No coitus.
No what?
No what? No coitus. It doesn't make me horny.
Right. there's no such thing as unconditional love except from animals. So, all right. So then the next one, which I haven't read, yesterday, it comes out on Friday. It's called Extreme Responses. So what will this be about? So since I haven't read it, I might stumble a bit, not knowing where the sentences are going. So it says, Extreme Responses. We can surmount the challenges facing this once grand republic of ours. So it's sort of like a patriot thing. Well, we know it'll be a different kind of patriot with him. So he says, I heard a clip, and I got a mute.
All participants are now muted.
Looks like that noise is coming from Corbin's place. Diminutive archfiend Charles Manson has outlived Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor who managed to persuade the court to sentence him to death despite being unable to actually place him at the scene of the crimes of which he was accused. Vapid mannequin Lindsay Lohan just turned 29, despite a lifestyle that could kill Ozzy Osbourne. Kanye West demonstrated his complete lack of talent in front of God and everybody at Glastonbury when he made an embarrassingly feeble attempt to cover Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. without the auto-tune device that has previously covered the fact that his singing, quote, singing, unquote, voice is markedly worse than that of the average barnyard animal. Donald Trump is clearly still taking orders from the demonic being perched on his head, craftily disguised as a bad toupee. Hillary Clinton is having a perfect Gloria Swanson moment in her political rendition of Sunset Boulevard. Bloated gasbag Chris Christie persists in believing that bankrupting the state of New Jersey somehow qualifies him to eat his way into a heart attack in the Oval Office. The Supreme Court's shockingly rational decision to legalize same-sex marriage triggered spasms of outrage from the swine who pose as Christians in quotes, while exhibiting none of the qualities extolled by Jesus Christ in his numerous lectures. America's endless war on terror has come full circle. We are now openly supporting Al-Qaeda, the alleged perpetrators of the 9-1-1 attacks that inspired the whole lunatic crusade. Black America is more concerned with the display of a battle flag from a failed rebellion that occurred 150 years ago than the fact that their undereducated kids are murdering one another at a rate that makes the cops and the KKK look like slackers. Speaking of the cops, they've killed about 500 Americans so far this year, and it's only July. There are now more Spanish speakers in the USA than in Spain. Raccoons are riding on alligators in Florida. Sharks are chomping down children in North Carolina. The whole West Coast is on fire. Coyotes have invaded Manhattan, and the weather has gone completely insane. Extreme conditions demand extreme responses. With a little creative thinking, we can surmount the challenges facing this once grand republic of ours and prevail, or at least make things more interesting. I have some suggestions. Getting rid of the old Confederate battle flag is a good first step, but why stop there? Surely Old Glory is every bit as offensive to American Indians as the Bonnie Blue is to the blacks. In the general measure of human evil, outright genocide is certainly worse than slavery. The Gadsden flag is offensive to our ever-expanding population of bureaucrats and civil servants with its openly anti-authoritarian, "Don't Tread on Me" slogan. Additionally, it would be offensive to the numerous non-English speakers now filling the ranks of scab labor. We should come clean and be honest with ourselves about exactly who we are and make the Jolly Roger our flag. We could then replace the insipidly superstitious "In God We Trust" motto with something more effective at articulating our true intellectual and spiritual aspirations. Then he has, he quotes, capital A-R-R-R-G-G-H, or ARG. ARG would be perfect. Nobody in their right mind trusts God. Ban marriage altogether. Something like 4 out of 5 American marriages end in divorce anyway. And science informs us that monogamy runs against human nature and stifles human evolution. The essentials of marriage, such as property rights, estate transfer, and power of attorney, can be more easily obtained through simpler and less ostentatious legal means. This would avoid innumerable human tragedies, legal imbroglios, and drunken post-reception parking lot brawls. Drunken post-reception, wedding reception? Drunken post-reception parking lot brawls. Ban auto-tune and digital instruments from the live music industry. If I want to hear a computer sing or imitate a human drummer, I can do it cheaply from the comfort of my own home without enduring the stench of the unwashed masses, $20 parking fees, $10 beers, and unspeakably filthy toilet facilities. Plus, I can have adorable cats, hedgehogs, koalas, puppies, and monkeys as avatars for these silicon-based presentations instead of wretched bipolar sluts and brain-dead macho posers. Institute a draft for the office of president. The job attracts the wrong sort of person, low-life grifters and narcissists with aberrant ideas and delusions of grandeur, criminal psychopaths and social deviants, unadulterated human filth. Simply find the best person for the job and drag them into the White House and lock them in for 4 to 8 years. If they fuck up, shoot them. Replacements can always be found. Personally, I'd like to see John McAfee in the position, with maybe Charles Manson or Johnny Knoxville in the Veep slot for insurance. If a woman is absolutely necessary, I'd favor Maureen Downed. She's a New York Times columnist, or Karen Finley. Karen Finley was, an avant-garde artist, or a mythical avant-garde artist. If a woman is absolutely necessary, I'd favor Maureen Dowd or Karen Finley. Sorry. If a woman is absolutely necessary, I'd favor Maureen Dowd or Karen Finley. Maybe Diamanda Galas. It seems like something Lindsay Lohan could do. She sure as hell can't act. Stop the clearly bogus and utterly ineffective war on drugs. Make recreational drug use mandatory. And put the donut-eating tax parasite drug warriors to work enforcing the policy by going door-to-door to residences and workplaces, randomly forcing the citizenry to pee in cups. If the drug test comes back negative, send out a SWAT team to kick their doors in, beat them senseless, trash the house, and kill their dogs. That means if they weren't doing the drugs, they should be beat up. It'd be even better if the SWAT team got the address wrong, as they so often do these days, and trashed the neighbor's house instead. That'd send a clear message. Develop powerful psychedelics to keep the animal kingdom at bay. The furry fuckers and their shark buddies know that we've broken the planet, and they want revenge. The only way we're going to survive to get to Mars is if we can get all these goddamn vengeful animals so high that they'll leave us alone for the time it takes for us to leave. When you see raccoons riding on alligators, you know it's time to leave. That's a collaboration that should strike dread into any human heart, no matter how witless or dysfunctional. Should they manage to enlist the cats in their nefarious misanthropic enterprise, the internet will break and we'll all sink into morbid catatonia, die slowly and agonizingly from Facebook withdrawal. There's nothing to be done about the weather. Clearly God hates us. It's not about gay marriage. It goes back further than that. He's still pissed about the ending of The Sopranos.
All participants are now unmuted.
Yes.
You've
I really like when he said that to pay Donald Trump's toupee's demon possessing him.
Yes.
And,
Wait a minute. What did you just say?
It's actually... Yeah, lately...
I think you mixed it up.
No, Donald Trump has been saying very bad things about the Mexican immigrants. They
right.
say they're the worst of Mexico. And actually, it's people who work real hard for very low money. And I think it's very unfair to say that because, well. And,
are you aware of the supposed gangsters coming over?
Well, of course, there are also gangsters, but they're also training people in Mexico to.
They're also
create
what?
Chaos.
Yeah, training people, right.
Yeah. So,
okay, so I thought when you said Donald Trump, I thought you said donut. And the donut comes
well,
in.
that's better.
Donut eating.
Donut, donut Trump.
Yeah, donut
will
Trump.
Apply.
He's clearly still taking orders from the demonic being perched on his head, craftily disguised as a bad toupee. You like that sentence. That was worth it.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
I think it's interesting
to
hear to this litany of little men, all the complaints, all the problems of what
you
I
find
involved.
That you're saying you've...
Well, interesting. What most people experience in the world now is this litany of problems and complaints and.
Right.
And I said
so
before, "Welcome to Babylon."
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so,
easy for a princess to say.
Of course.
Oh.
Yes,
well,
I won't disagree.
Right, but she's not a princess anymore, Madeline. She hasn't been in 20 years. She had to fend for herself, and she doesn't take money from her parents. But she
from
does
anybody.
Have the from anybody, from the backup.